99. Toll free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 13th day of July, Anno Domini 2024. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Have you paid your dues? Here comes the news.
It's Geneseo Air Show weekend, and so all of the planes have been flying in. And right now there's a couple of F-22 Raptors sitting at the airport.
Nice.
Because they need a paved runway.
Right.
And it was apparently a C-5 Super Galaxy making touch-and-goes at the airport a couple of days ago.
And you missed it.
After the fact.
Right.
People from the airport posted photos.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so if you're into airplanes at all, Geneseo Air Show.
Right. Yep. All right, and if you're a... Microsoft Systems Administrator, clear your calendar.
Yeah, really.
The bundle of fixes in Redmond's July patch Tuesday is a doozy, with at least two bugs under active exploitation. Tuesday's software updates address more than 130 Microsoft CVEs, common vulnerabilities and exposures. And let me start out by apologizing for my voice. Blame every single thing that grows on this planet.
Sinuses,
pollen,
allergies, every single thing. So I apologize for my voice. The first of two vulnerabilities for sure under active exploit is a Windows Hyper-V elevation of privilege flaw with a 7.8 out of 10 CVSS rating, which Microsoft deemed important. The second bug listed as having been found and exploited by miscreants before Redmond pushed a patch is a Windows MSHTML platform spoofing vulnerability. MSHTML, aka Trident, is Microsoft's proprietary browser engine for Internet Explorer. And this one received a 7.5 CVS severity score. And by the way, it's not a big deal. I mean, it's not a surprise, rather, that the miscreants found this one, because this vulnerability has been known and unfixed since January of 2023. A year and a half. This was Redmond. Microsoft has known about it and not done doodly squat. The first of two CVE bugs listed.
Well, it's only a 7, right?
What?
It's only a 7.
Yeah, it's only a 7. 7.8. 7.8.
Ah, we rounded up.
It's like buying something for $7.99.
Yeah.
The first of two CVE bugs listed as publicly disclosed but not publicly exploited is a remote code execution vulnerability in .NET and Visual Studio, which you're using, by the way. You may think to yourself, I don't write anything in .NET or Visual Studio. You run those codes all the time whenever you run pretty much anything on Windows, so you need those updates. The second known but not exploited bug affects ARM-based Redmond operating systems and garnered a 5.9 CVS rating. Of the remaining Microsoft CVEs, 5 are critical severity, and 3 of those are 9.8 rated RCE bugs, remote code execution bugs, in Windows Remote Desktop Licensing Service. Redmond described all 3 of these as exploitation less likely. The other 2 critical Microsoft bugs include an 8.8 rated RCE in Windows imaging component that could be exploited by any authenticated user uploading a malicious TIFF file to a server, and a 7.2 rated flaw in Microsoft SharePoint server, which can also lead to remote code execution. Adobe, SAP, Fortinet, Citrix, and Android all had multiple patches as well. Android alone had 27. Now, the worst of the bunch is a critical security vulnerability in the framework component that could lead to local escalation of privilege with no additional execution privileges needed. So update Windows, update your phone, and go live in a bunker. Our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is hundreds of updates out this month. And your choices are, I'm up a... That was not a choice. Your choices
are. It's
always a choice. Your choices are, I'm updating everything, I'll get to it, and going commando, baby. So far, we've got 18 votes, and I'm updating everything, which is the smart response, is significantly in the lead. And you can update everything, but you can also join us here on the show. Just give us a call at 585-966-CHAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415.
And Microsoft keeps pushing this recall feature, which will take a snapshot of your screen every few seconds, so you can recall anything you've ever done.
Right.
Well, so can the bad guys.
Right.
Microsoft says,
duh.
Microsoft says it's encrypted. Someone already showed it's unencrypted while you are logged into your computer.
Right.
So if anything gets into your computer, well, that'll never happen. There's 100 vulnerabilities this month that all have remote code execution, which means someone remotely can get into your computer.
Exactly.
Not to mention the fact that you might turn it off on your machine, but someone else has it on their computer. You email them something private, and their machine recalls it, and the bad guys get it.
Right. That's exactly right.
It's consolidating all of the most valuable information that bad guys want into one place, your recall database, which is a SQLite database.
It is.
People have already figured it out.
People have already figured it out. And it's, you're absolutely right. It's a stupid idea. It's the same problem with BitLocker, the thing that will encrypt your hard drive. It's only encrypted when you're not using it.
Mm-hmm.
The minute you log in, it's unencrypted. When do 90% of viruses hit you? When you're logged in.
So that will protect you if someone physically steals your computer.
And that's all it will protect you from.
Which is a very small chance.
Very small chance. If you travel, absolutely. If you travel and turn off your computer while you travel, then absolutely. But people who just put it to sleep or whatever, nope, you're not protected.
I know people that travel that just, they'll get like a burner Chromebook, like a burner phone. You get a burner computer because you have no idea what's going to happen.
That's right. I have my real Chromebook, as I think of it, and I have a burner Chromebook. Mm-hmm. It was super cheap. It does everything I need it to do when I'm on the road, and I'm done. I'm happy. Life is good. If somebody steals it, I laugh, change my password, because why not, and I'm done. I am done.
Yeah. You're safe.
I'd read a story about a security professional wouldn't give up his phone, so they wouldn't let him on the plane. So he calls the office, and what do? I have to get on this plane to get, give me your phone, and never trust it again. You don't know what they're going to do to it. They can add software to it.
Yes, they can.
Yeah, because they can compel you. They can compel you to turn over your passcode or hold it up to your face, and it unlocks.
Right.
And they can then install things. So you have no idea what they're doing. And why do they want your phone? So because somewhere back along the way, the MPAA said that the Border Patrol has to be copyright police.
Right.
So they have to make sure that every song on your phone you've paid for. Well, how are you going to tell that? Well, you got to carry all your receipts with you.
Yep.
Ludicrous.
Yeah, no, it's the problem with it now is it's security theater.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing they're doing actually makes you safer.
Trust us, it's encrypted.
No.
Right. Looks like they're doing something.
You used to use RoboForm? Did you?
Ages ago?
Yeah, it was one of the very first password managers with encryption.
Yeah, decades ago.
A segment on Security Now this week. Someone was able to recover $4 million of Bitcoin because RoboForm's encryption was crap. And they were able... Steve was saying, I can hardly call it encryption because it was based on the date and time. So if you generated two passwords within the same second, it was exactly the same.
Excellent.
And it was deterministic. So this guy went to a Bitcoin cracker. So for 10% of the value, we'll crack into it. So when did you save this password? March of 2010. So he set the computer clock to March of 2010. Got the password back.
Yep.
Whoa. Yep.
So the guy said he's almost glad he lost the password because he would have sold it when Bitcoin hit 10,000. Now it hits 60,000.
Right. But there, and this brings up another point. Using a password manager is very important. Equally, if not more important, is putting a really strong password on that password manager. It turns out, if you use a password manager, the only password you have to remember is the password to get into the password manager. So make it a good one, because the length and complexity of that password is the basis for the encryption for the file you're using.
Yep. And RoboForm had the same problem that LastPass did when they got breached. In the very, very early days, when computers weren't all that powerful, the encryption protocols were relatively weak compared to today.
Right.
Because we didn't have the computer power back then. Well, along the way, companies will upgrade the encryption protocols. And the iteration count, the big thing now is password-based key derivation iteration count. Your iteration count should be at least 1 million. In the early days of LastPass, it was 1. And so the companies...
Well, to be fair, like you said, right, that it really was, couldn't have been much more.
Right. And when they came out with a new version and upgraded the password security of their program, they didn't rekey all your old passwords. Or they didn't tell you to rekey all your old passwords. So people now that this RoboForm weakness is known, and the LastPass weakness is already known, people are losing their Bitcoin wallets because their passwords were stored back when the encryption wasn't that good. And since 20 years later, we can break it now.
Right.
One other key thing, though, with your password manager, I would suggest letting other folks know that, say you're going to go into somebody's password manager that you have to get in, and for some reason it's confused. Usually, like say on NPass, a menu will drop down, and it'll say, "Okay, if you want to sign back in, what service are you using?" And quite often, it will do Dropbox, OneDrive, Google Drive, and it's critical that the folks need to know what service you're using, because otherwise they're not going to be able to get into it.
Right, and that's to sync your passwords between devices.
Yep,
right. Which is really handy on a phone, because it's hard to type a really good password on your phone.
But you can use your fingerprint.
Yeah, your fingerprint now to then unlock the password manager that types the really long password into the form.
Exactly. And the other thing is, as Dave was talking about, it reminded me that you should be sharing your password with someone, the password to your password manager, because God forbid the worst happens to you. But we've all seen it. Can you get the pictures from grandma's phone or whatever? You know, my mother's phone, I can't get into it to get her pictures.
Yep.
Whatever. But if you've got all those passwords, and you've got if she's got it up on Google Drive or Amazon Photos or whatever, if you've got the password to those, you can get that stuff.
But it's key to know also what service, because otherwise you're going to be apt to sit there spending quite a bit of time, trying to connect to this one. No, it's not that one. Yeah. Go to this one and hope that you don't get locked out.
Yeah. Right.
Both Google and Apple have legacy contact information. Microsoft does not. So before you pass, you go into your Google account or your Apple account, you can set up a legacy contact. So if you pass, this other person is authorized to get into your stuff. With Microsoft, you submit a letter with proof, with a death certificate to Microsoft lawyers, and they decide if they'll let you in or not.
Yeah. So smart.
Yeah.
Well, I'm surprised they don't make you fax it.
Yeah. But yeah, so there's so many people have so many digital assets these days.
Right.
And we constantly have people come into the office. My parents died and I can't get into their stuff. Or my kid died, which, that's
worse.
And I can't get into his stuff. And, there's nothing we can do. Well, you go through the forgot your password link. Who was your, best friend in high school? Do you know who your child's best friend in middle school may have been?
Right.
Maybe. Do you remember your best friend in middle school?
Right.
Go back and check your security answers every now and then.
Yep. And remember, lie on your security answers. Who was your best friend in high school? Purple.
You got to remember how you lied when it
comes
back.
Well, that's what a password manager is for.
Yep.
There's a notes field in every password manager, and you can put the question and your lying answer in that password field. So if it ever comes up and says, security, for security reasons, who was your best friend in high school? Log into my password manager. Oh, purple. They don't care.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, be aware that that sort of thing is
sound bites are
very, very, very common. And the usages of a password manager go far beyond just simply a password manager.
Yeah.
Put all your security questions and answers. Questions and answers. So if you just put purple, you don't know what question it was.
Right. And the downside of encryption, and we talk about encryption stores your stuff as a blob of noise. The downside of encryption, the good side of encryption is no one can get into it without the password. The downside of encryption is you can't get into it without the password.
That's exactly right. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Roger from Webster, New York. Hi, Roger. What's up?
An update from my call last week. Skype purchase of credit on a credit card.
Yeah, okay.
All the agencies, all the big companies have chat, which I notified of my displeasure. But I was introduced to a very pleasant, intelligent young lady at the Webster Public Library.
Nice.
She was stumped for 15 or 20 minutes. She finally fixed it.
Great.
Librarians are the best.
Librarians should be Conan the Librarian.
Yeah.
These people should be ruling the world.
Yeah, she was very pleasant, very helpful. I was then Skype trying to buy, and then I went to the Play Store and tried to buy, and I kept getting the two-factor authorization. I couldn't get by it. She claims I was not really signed into GooglePlay.com. She signed me in. Purchase completed.
Nice. Right. Very, very nice. Well done, librarian.
Just for your information. Okay?
Appreciate it.
Yep.
Thank you, Roger.
And she'd probably done it dozens of times already for other patrons. That's people ask me all the time. You know, how do you know this stuff? Well, I've done this 1,000 times already.
Right.
And if I don't know, I ask Nick. Between us, we have 100 years of computer, more than 100 years of computer experience.
That's exactly right. Sadly, yeah. And the big thing is we remember this stuff because it's rote memory. We've done it so many times, so many times. People come to us often and say, I'm really embarrassed to ask you this. And my first thought is, I've heard it before.
Yeah.
I don't know what you're about to say, but I've heard it before.
In 33 years.
Don't be embarrassed. I've heard it before. And, I've heard it before. It might be a new product.
Yeah.
But the problem isn't different.
No, same.
You
just
know?
A
so,
different twist.
Yeah. So... don't ever be afraid. It's one of the beauties of this show. People call up and they give us their name and, you know, what city they're in. Well, there's at least, for example, Roger. There's probably at least two Rogers in Webster. So we don't necessarily know which one it is. But that means that you get to ask your questions semi-anonymously. You don't have to be embarrassed. You don't have to be afraid. Nobody's going to make fun of you unless I actually know you personally. And then I will be merciless. But other than that, we are here to help you with your questions.
And one other thing I might add, as my little spot always says, two key things, folks. One, I don't want to hear your question. I just want your name and where you're calling from. And please, speak up. I'm in the studio right next to these guys, not more than 5 feet away, and they're talking where I'm with hearing aids trying to hear your voice. And you talk very
loud. Yeah, he has to whisper, but you shouldn't.
Yeah. So please, you know, I mean, help me out.
Right. It's a... There are so many people with similar computer issues. One of the beauties of this show is we've always said you don't have to necessarily call in with your question because somebody else is going to ask it.
Mm-hmm. And that's why we have a list of the callers on our website. You can see what someone else's question was and then jump to that spot in the audio archive or video archive and see what the answer was.
And Steve is doing all of that. He's gone from the days of just sitting there hoping desperately someone will call in with a Mac question to running everything. It's quite amazing. If you have a computer question, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415. Just like Doug did from Irondequoit, New York. What's up, Doug?
Well, it's a question for one of you runs the whole admin thing at U of R, right?
Yes.
I think.
I ran the E. Philip Saunders College of Business at the Rochester Institute of Technology.
Oh, okay. Some big thing. Well, here's what this is about. Last week, my girlfriend's bank account got hacked. Luckily, all someone did was change or add a work address. And I questioned somebody at the bank. This is a Canadian bank. And I said, can't you determine whether that login came from within your organization, one of your branches, or from the outside? And the security person said, that's impossible. Does that sound ridiculous to you? Or
go ahead.
That person may not have been able to do it.
Right.
But someone there could have.
Here's the thing.
But it doesn't matter, because right. The bad guys hide their address anyway.
Well, but there should be logs of every transaction. If they're not, have your girlfriend remove every penny from that bank immediately. But there should be logs of who logged in from where to each thing every second. Now, that may be a spoofed address, but it probably wouldn't be spoofed from inside the bank. So if it was changed by someone inside the bank, my daughter works at a bank, and everything she does in that bank is logged.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody did this. This specific person did this specific thing from this specific terminal at this specific time. And if your girlfriend's bank does not have that level of logging, change banks immediately. Mm-hmm.
No one will tell them that.
Well, apparently the person at the bank said they don't. They told them they don't because they can't get that information.
And part of the problem then is it may not help any. So say it came from someone in the bank on a phone support. Someone called in and said, I need to change an address on my account. And they had enough, well, hopefully, they had enough account credentials or name or number in order to do that. And that's sort of the first step. Now that I have a known address on this account, I can use that to either get another account or drain this account. So it's a spoofing attack.
Right.
And they may have been, the bad guys will use data from one breach. So say your girlfriend's social security number got lost in one breach. The bad guys will call up a bank using that as the identifiable information to add something new to the account. So now that we have something established on the account, I can do something else. So send me a new credit card at my work address and then run it up again.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's
that's interesting.
So many links in the chain that everyone could have done everything right. But your girlfriend's data has been breached.
It also could have just simply been a mistake. The person on the desk.
123 Main Street instead of 234 Main Street.
Right.
Yeah.
Or the person on the desk may have simply typed the wrong account number and added it there. Listen, we got to go. Got to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 29 minutes after the hour. Sound Bites. Member supported Jazz 90.1. Sold American.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites, and we have Mark from.
Well, no, wait. Before I want to back up a little bit on the banking question. It's unlikely that anyone at the bank is ever going to tell you anything about their security.
Right.
Because they don't want the bad guys to know. So it strikes me as odd that the guy said it's impossible, but I don't know how to do it. I could see him saying. But you know, someone trying to keep logs. Because, you know, banks, why do you rob banks? That's where the money is. If we can do it digitally instead of physically, that's even easier.
Yep, exactly right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. What's up, Mark?
Good afternoon. Since the show seems to be talking a lot about security, my question is people have told me about these and I don't understand them, something called a pass key to replace passwords?
Yes.
So have you heard of that? So I'll just let you know, explain to me, and then I'll go from there on my own. Okay, so thank you very much for your answers.
Sure, thanks.
Okay,
so originally... Okay, originally we had no security, and they decided passwords were good, but with passwords, they discovered that people are apparently human, and they want easy and fast, and they forget.
Simplistic.
So, yeah. So, passwords in general are not secure.
And it means the other end has to keep a secret for you.
Right.
And
right.
Other ends are very bad at keeping secrets.
Right.
In fact, so when you type a password into a field, it obscures the letters you're typing. The
right.
guy that suggested that, part of NIST,
right.
has apologized to the internet. They were thinking the biggest threat would be someone looking over your shoulder, watching you type your password, which is a threat.
Right.
The bigger threat is you mistyping your password.
Right.
So that's why a lot of password fields now have a little eyeball button, so you can see what you're typing. Someone else looking over your shoulder can still see it.
Right.
But the fact that you have to remember it means that people reuse their passwords because they don't want to have to remember too many of them. And the other end has to keep a secret that they're notoriously bad at keeping.
Right. So they're moving on to something called pass keys. Now, although they're called keys, they rarely are. It's just an alternate method of signing in. So your fingerprint is a pass key. Your face scan is a pass key. The PIN number you use is kind of somewhere in between a pass key and a password. But that's really pretty much the big difference.
Yeah, since your phone or your computer already knows it's you, with typically some sort of biometric right. face recognition, fingerprint recognition, the web server asks your web browser, is this Bill? And your fingerprint reader says, touch the fingerprint and prove you're Bill. So you do. Your web browser tells the other end, yep, it's right. Bill, let him in.
And it's really that okay. simple. So you see that a lot with two-factor authentication. That's a type of pass key. In addition, a lot of places now use their own sort of authenticator. Google has an authenticator. Microsoft has one. Facebook, everybody's got one.
And that goes back to how often do you change your password?
Right.
Well, the initial recommendation was every 90 days. Because what if a bad guy got your password? You want to change it. What if he got it 89 days ago? You don't want them in your account for 89 days.
Right.
So you should change your password every minute.
Right.
Which is what the authenticators do. Every minute, the password changes.
Actually, every second. But, yes. And so you go to, for example, I had to do this today. I logged into something, and it said, okay, prove you're you. Go to your phone and check the screen. And the screen said, are you trying to log into X site? I said, yes, I am. The screen changed on my computer and said, okay, pick the number 72 off your phone. And I looked at my phone, and there were five or six numbers. I tapped on 72, and it let me into my website on my computer.
Because you were already logged in and authenticated on your phone. The phone knew it was you and could tell the other end.
And basically, that's a passkey. So the phrase is new.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I'm... Okay, so, no, thank you for your answer. What you're saying about logging in from my phone, you know, seeing something on a television screen, whatnot, I guess I've been doing that all along, or, you know, seeing those prompts and, you know, and following those instructions.
What the prompts have been...
Those are the passkeys are.
Sort of.
The passkey. Go ahead.
Well, okay. Yeah, so the way that two-factor has been working and your phone asking for your face... Then types your password into the field for you.
Yes,
the new system coming on called Passkeys trademark from the FIDO Alliance trademark is a way of passwordless login. So it doesn't use passwords at all. So the other end has no secret to lose.
Okay.
And many sites are now asking. If you when you log into a site, do you want to set up a passkey? Google sites do that. Apple sites do that because they're part of the FIDO Alliance and they're pushing it. Microsoft is still pushing it toward their authenticator still. But we have 50 years of password inertia behind us. The problem is my boss's husband was having trouble with his computer logging into his Google account, so my boss did it on her computer. And when Google asked if you want to set up a passkey, she just said yes.
Right.
So it used her biometrics to set up his account. So now he can never log in again. So we had to figure out how to turn off passkey biometrics on a Google account. But yeah, so passkeys, the trademark capital P is a passwordless authentication system that many modern websites are using. Not everyone is. It's likely that not everyone will.
So, and there are a whole bunch of different passkey things.
Right.
So it could be your phone, it could be your watch, it could be an actual fob on your keychain. There's 100 different ways that people are doing it. But basically, it's multi-factor authentication.
Right. And the first stab at multi-factor authentication was text messaging. But text messages themselves are not secure. So that's why moving to authenticator apps that you've already logged into yourself is becoming more common. Especially for anything with money. You know, if you want to log into Field & Stream and see when your account expires, you probably don't need something that secure. But if you're logging into Amazon or logging into PayPal, you know, anything with money behind it, you want a good strong password, you want to use a biometric pass key if they offer it.
Right. Well, no. Thank you very much. That kind of cleared up a lot of questions. And you're right. I have been asked if I, you know, at various. I'm just a little nervous. You know, do you want to set up a passkey?
Right.
Sometimes I've said yes. Sometimes I said no. If I, you know, I kind of write down whatever I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
But I understand what's going on now. So, Liz, thank you for your answer.
You're welcome.
You answer a lot. Very good. Bye now.
Thanks. Yeah. Bye-bye. Okay. You know what annoys me? A lot of things. But in one of the things that annoys me is my bank has an app.
Mm-hmm.
And when I log into my bank, I have a choice of getting a text message with a code or having the code sent to the app. If I have them send me a text message, I get it within seconds. If I have them send it to the app, it takes up to half an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Huh?
And you're standing at the register trying to buy something. That needs
Hello?
To be approved.
Yeah. That's stupid.
So I've stopped using the app. I'm sorry. There's no point in that anymore. I don't have a half an hour to sit around and wait.
But that's more secure than a text message. They should make it faster.
You think? It is not.
I mean, anything else, you know, you go to the store and they charge you, it's instantly reflected back into your account.
I every morning and every evening I check my accounts. So I went to log in this morning, and I clicked on, send it to the app on my phone. Nothing. So I backed out of it, went back in, and said, send it to my, text me. And it texted me, and I got in, and I checked my stuff, and I'm great. I went downstairs 2.5 hours later to get into my car to come here. My phone went off. I looked. It was the pass key. It was the code for my bank.
Get that
noise. Well, that's not useful to me. I'm sorry. It is not useful to me.
On my main computer at the office, when I log in and it sends the notification, that takes forever for the code to come through. And every other computer in the office, when I log in, the notification comes through instantly.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Why?
Right. It's the same code. It's the same type of computer. It's the same network.
It's a newer OS. The only thing I think is it's a newer OS. But that should be better, right?
Right. Theoretically, yes. It should be better, yes.
Should be.
All right. We've been speaking about passwords and all of that stuff. And boy, do I have a doozy for you here. The largest collection of stolen passwords ever has been leaked to a notorious crime marketplace, according to cybersecurity researchers at Cyber News. This leak, dubbed Rock You 2024, holds a file containing nearly 10 billion, that's billion with a B,
unbelievable,
unique plain text passwords, allegedly gathered from a series of data breaches and hacks accumulated over several years. The passwords were posted on July 4th and is being called the most extensive collection of stolen and leaked credentials ever seen on the internet. In its essence, the Rock You 2024 leak is a compilation of real-world passwords used by individuals all over the world. Revealing that many passwords for threat actors substantially heightens the risk of credential stuffing attacks, where they have, you know, you're used to, oh, you had one attempt, you had two attempts, you had three attempts, now you're locked out. If they can get into the back end of a computer, which they do very often at banks and places like that, they can throw a billion passwords at every account and see which one breaks it. Credential stuffing attacks are among the most common methods criminals, ransomware affiliates, and state-sponsored hackers use to access services and systems. Threat actors could exploit the Rock You 2024 password collection to conduct brute force attacks against any unprotected system and gain unauthorized access to various online accounts used by individuals whose passwords are included in the data set. This could affect various targets, from online services to internet-facing cameras and industrial hardware. However, despite the seriousness of the data leak, it is important to note that Rock You 2024 is primarily a compilation of previously leaked passwords, estimated to contain entries from a total of 4,000 massive databases of stolen credentials covering at least two decades. It's new, so probably my MySpace password is in there somewhere. This new file notably includes an earlier credentials database known as Rock You 2021, which featured 8.4 billion passwords. Rock You 2024 added approximately 1.5 billion passwords, spanning from 2021 through 2024, which, though a massive figure, is only a fraction of the reported 9.9 billion passwords in the leak. However, the odds that one of those passwords is yours is really, really, really high. In response to the leak, we recommend the same old stuff we've been harping on for years, immediately changing the passwords for any accounts associated with the leaked credentials, ensuring each password is strong and unique and not reused across different platforms. Additionally, we advise enabling multi-factor authentication, which requires an extra form of verification beyond the password wherever possible to strengthen cybersecurity, e.g. passkeys. Lastly, if you use a password manager, which securely generates and stores complex passwords, mitigating the risk of password reuse across multiple accounts. The tools are out there. Use them. How are you feeling about passwords now? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415.
And virtually every password manager has some sort of a warn me if a password is breached. Mm-hmm. Browsers are doing it, Safari and Firefox and Chrome, because they have password managers built in, will warn you about a password breach. And you can always go to haveibeenpwned.com. Troy Hunt is the he's the collector of all of the breachedness.
Breachidity,
yeah. So far he has he's collected 13 billion unique pwned accounts. So he goes through this list, 10 billion records, and he'll figure out the new ones and then post those into a new list of what's new.
Yep.
The fun thing is, if you look through the list of breaches, most of the breaches are bad guys breaking into other bad guys and stealing each other's breach list.
Right. And one of the things, I looked at that list, and I did a search. It's
yeah,
it's
you type
not
in your
fast.
You type your you can type in your email address, and it will show if it's been breached or not.
Right. Well, you're talking about have you been pwned?
Yeah, you can look at the whole list.
I looked at the list and discovered that many of my old passwords are in it.
What's your name?
But all of the new ones that I generated automatically with NPass are not in it because they are very long, very complex, and highly unique.
Yep.
I know highly unique is, I know, get over it. But that's so be aware that you have the tools at hand to keep yourself secure. The question is, are you going to use them?
Well, a customer comes in and Safari says they have 734 compromised passwords. They go, oh, and then ignore it.
Right.
Start with your banks and your email. Or part of the problem is if you change the password and don't update your password manager, it doesn't know you already changed the password, so it's still warning you about something you've already done.
I did that to mine the other day. We'll get to the phones in a second. I did that to mine the other day. I looked and it said, you know, he had X number of passwords, so compromised passwords and duplicate passwords and all of this. Looked, they're all sites that I just never bothered to remove from my password manager that are like 10 or 15 or 20 years old, like MySpace, like ICQ, which was great, but is no longer around. But the password was not
the
a good one.
Yep. Yeah.
ICQ one. Because you need four characters.
You need four characters. Exactly right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Brian from Walworth, New York. What's up, Brian?
Hey there. Two questions. One's probably a silly question, and the one's probably not. The other one's probably no answer to it, but we'll try. I have Norton Utilities on my computer, which I'm generally happy with, but it has a disk cleaner option, which tells me to get rid of all this stuff. But the truth is, I don't really know if that's safe to get rid of. For example, Windows catch files, Windows log files, program catch files, Windows temp files, program log files.
Right. Generally speaking, log files and temp files can be removed.
Okay.
Unless you want to go in and see who breached you.
Right. Assuming you don't want to go back and look at those logs. The temp files can always be removed. The log files, it depends on whether or not you're the sort of person who goes back and checks old logs.
And temp files will keep happening. That's not something just because you do it once with Norton that it's completely going to go away. It's a reoccurring thing with Windows.
But I've also seen many people get back gigabytes of disk space by deleting those things. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I've never looked at a log file in my life that I know of.
Right. So. 99% of all log files are just, this happened, that happened. You logged in, you typed a character, you changed a file. So those won't mean anything to you, and particularly if they're fairly old, just get rid of them. Log files are always being regenerated. Temp files are always being regenerated. You should have no trouble deleting those. Peace of mind. Have peace of mind. Temp files and log files can be deleted.
And make sure you have a good backup, because you want to back up your stuff anyway, and if you realize you need one of those things, you can always go back and get it.
No, I back every day. That's not a problem. I've learned my lesson that way a long time ago. The biggest thing it was to get rid of was the Windows cache file. It's just over a gigabyte.
The cache file, the whole point behind a cache was back in the day when internet connections were very slow. Windows, every program, every browser, everything would. When you downloaded pictures and stuff, it saved them on your computer so that in a cache, so that if it went back if you went back to that site, what the browser would say is, oh, hey, I see I've already got this picture. I got it on January 5th at 2 p.m. Is your version newer? No. Okay, then I'll just show them this version. So rather than downloading a whole brand new giant picture, it just asks a question and then shows that picture. Nowadays, caches are less necessary because we have huge pipes to download stuff from. And
everything changes so fast, you never go back to the same page again.
Right, right. Most pages don't.
The company's logo could be cached.
Right,
because,
right.
Because
right.
that probably won't change.
Right. So deleting the cache just means the next time you go to a specific site, it will re-download that image. If you're on dial-up, that's important. If you're on fiber, you won't even notice it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm managing my team, mobile internet connection. I'm pretty happy with it.
Good.
And second, my habit is in the morning, I like to sit and look at Microsoft News. Is this for the cat comes with the computer? But recently, they've added this new Microsoft Copilot that automatically shows up whenever I click on something.
Yeah.
It's a pain. I mean, yeah, you can click and get rid of it, but I don't want it at all. Now, I found a little tab under it that I could slide that I thought turned it off, but that did not work.
Are you on Windows 11 or 10?
10.
Yeah, they've made it tricky to disable Microsoft Copilot. Make sure.
Yeah.
Now, the thing that's coming along with Copilot is Microsoft Recall, and that you definitely do not want.
Yeah, I haven't seen that yet, but yeah, if you're good old everyday AI companion, well, go away, please. But yep. There's no way to make it away, I suspect.
There are ways, but
I'm wondering if the
deeply buried in the settings. I want to make sure I find. Nope, I have to go to the registry. Everyone I'm finding about turning off Copilots, you have to go to the registry and do things, which is very, very dangerous.
I've got the settings open. And there again, there's a Copilot response on result page, which I have turned off, but that does not appear to have done anything.
Right. You need to be signed in as the administrator, and you can, somewhere in those menus, theoretically at least, you can disable and remove Copilot. The problem is that also disables the sidebar in Microsoft Edge. You may not care about that. And it will also disable secure DNS in Microsoft Edge. How nice.
Yeah. Every search I'm going to for disabling Copilot, you have to go in the registry to turn it off because Microsoft has embedded it into the latest versions of Windows.
Yeah, all right. I'm not going to do that, but thank you, Jonathan. Appreciate
yeah,
what
sorry.
You do. My preamble was I expected that was the answer, so
right.
I'm not disappointed, and I appreciate what you do. Long-standing station supporter, so appreciate what you got.
One other program, though, you might want to try is Revo One Installer.
Copilot is a Microsoft service. Revo's not going to find it.
Yeah, Revo won't do it.
Because it does do OneDrive.
That's not a service. That's a product.
Yeah, that's true.
Service is
yeah.
built into the machine, yep. and it won't do it. All right, thank you, Brian, and thank you so much for being a member.
Yeah, been that way for many years.
Well, that's what we like to hear. Thanks. All right. That music tells us that we are done. But do not despair. We're only done for the first hour. That means there's a whole other hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe coming your way. A whole other hour of Dave Enright. A whole other hour of Steve Ray. And a whole other hour of Nick Francesco. And, of course, a whole other hour of you. You can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415. Take a quick bio break. Make yourself a sandwich. Get yourself a beverage. But come on back, because we're going to do a whole lot more sound bites. And at best, if you give us a call. And we will be back with more sound bites right here. On the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported, Jazz 90.1. See you in just a few.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
Celebrating 50 years on the air in Rochester.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back to this edition of Sound Bites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And Nick will be back just momentarily. He had to step out just for a moment and get a bio drink. So he will be, matter of fact, he's on his way back into the studio right now. But I want to encourage you folks, you know, we've got Mark on the phone, which we'll get to in a minute. But please, by all means, give us a call, 585-966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415 with your computer questions as we start this second hour of Soundbites, the longest-running computer show in the nation.
In the known universe.
In the known universe. Get it right. You're going to get it right.
Known space.
Well, did you see that picture of the universes that came from outer space that they actually collided?
The two galaxies.
Yep. And they look like a penguin.
We're on a collision course with the Andromeda Galaxy.
Yep.
In about 4 billion years.
Just one more thing to worry about.
So in about 4 billion years, the sun's going to expand to a red giant and destroy us. In about 4 billion years, we're going to collide with Andromeda. So it's a race.
It's a race.
You know one thing I can
guarantee? Take that, Andromeda.
Yeah.
You know one thing I can guarantee you? None of us are going to see it.
Well, we don't know that.
I plan on living forever.
I guarantee.
No, I don't want to live. Unless they find a cure for all my ails, I don't want to live forever.
Yeah, that's the truth. But so far, I'm immortal. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. What's up, Mark?
Hey, Nick. How are you?
Peachy, how are you?
I'm doing well. Comment about the last caller with the co-pilot.
Yeah.
Seeing that it is a service, couldn't you just go in and turn off that service?
No, not easily. Microsoft...
You have to do it from the registry, and we don't want to recommend anyone going to their registry because it's really easy to screw it up.
It's not a standard service. It's not a standard service like most of the others, so you can't just turn it off from the service... app.
Well, how convenient.
Well, they're Microsoft. They own the machine, not you.
Yeah, it's their software, not yours.
You got some nerve, Mark, wanting to turn off their software.
Yeah, I really.
They know what's better for you.
Well, and the irony is that their first assistant was called Cortana, based on the Cortana in the Halo video series. They retired Cortana and came out with Copilot. Well, we knew what Cortana was. Yeah.
They both stink.
Yeah.
No one wants them.
Right.
Yeah, I've read
that. But yet we have to have them.
The best one I've read is, I know how to make an email myself. I want my assistant to do the laundry and wash the dishes.
Exactly. We don't have to have Microsoft. Yeah. I don't have Microsoft. I haven't run a Microsoft computer, except when I was helping a friend, for...
ages.
30 years? Wow, I'm old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's two pieces of software that I run that I'm not quite sure if I could run them in line. If I could figure that out, I'd probably be safe going over to Linux.
Well, everybody's got a program like that. I get that. You can certainly try, right? You can, if you've got an extra machine, you can put Linux on it, or you can put Linux on a thumb drive and run it as a live system right off the thumb drive. Now, to anybody listening, if you try that, be aware that it's going to be incredibly slow because everything is compressed to fit it all on the thumb drive. And every time you try to run something, it has to pull in the compressed file and uncompress it on the go. So that's slow.
But when you install it natively on your computer, it would be probably faster than Windows is running already.
Yes, it is, yeah.
Okay, would it run any faster on an external SSD?
Yes.
Well, the interface.
Up to a point.
Yeah. SSD is fast, you put it on USB is slow.
Right. So it'll run faster on the SSD because it doesn't have to decompress it.
more room.
Yeah, I've got an M.2 that's in a 3.2 USB, box.
So that's pretty good.
Yeah, it'll be pretty good. Yeah. It'll still be slower than it would be running it normally, but the only slow part is accessing a program. And as long as you understand that and compensate for it or just allow for it, you'll be fine.
Okay. I'm going to give it a try.
Go for it and let us know.
Thanks, guys. Have a good week.
Yep.
Thanks. You too. We have talked to people about Linux before. A new operating system is nothing to be afraid of. But you need to know that you can run all the programs you want on it.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the beauties of Linux is that it is free. Free as in no pay and free as in beer. Just use it.
You never own beer. You just rent it.
Well, that's the truth. but the thing is, you can throw it on a thumb drive and run it off of that. Or as Mark is talking about, throw it on an external hard drive and run it off of that. And play with it and see what you think and see, boot from that instead of from your regular hard drive and see what you think, see what you like. You may find that it's kind of super amazing. Give it a try and see what you think. All right, back to the phones and back to Brian from Walworth, New York again. What's up?
Sorry, I forgot to ask you something. It relates to your discussion earlier about security and dark web and all that sort of stuff. Norton, which I've got as my antivirus device, also offers an anti-track and dark web monitoring, which sounds like maybe a good idea, but it ain't cheap, but I don't want to be penny-wise and pound-foolish. Is something like that worth it?
I would say no, because, yes, you are on the dark web. Your information is on the dark web. That's a given.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Most credit cards offer their own protection, identity right. theft protection, credit card protection, and I use a free service called Credit Karma, which works with the credit reporting agencies to monitor your credit. So you can do all that monitoring yourself for free. Some people like to pay someone else to do it.
In addition, right now you can pay Google. If you are a Google One user, you can check your... They have something called the Dark Web Report for your information. The good news is that that's going to be free soon. I think it's the end of this month. I think could be next month. And it's going to roll out, so you may not see it right away. But the idea is you will... and as soon as it is actually available, we'll be talking about it in more detail.
All right. Yeah, I do use Credit Karma and that stuff, so that's a good answer. Thank you, gentlemen.
All right, thank you. Have fun.
Yeah, Norton bought LifeLock, which was the big identity protection company, and the CEO there was always well known for saying, "Here's my Social Security number. Go ahead and try to breach me." Every week, he got breached multiple times.
Yeah, he got breached so often, it's ridiculous.
I mean, my bank lets me know if there's any, the fraud alert. I get both the phone call and the text.
Right.
If anything's going on with my bank, because my debit card. And they are fantastic about it.
Yep. My wife, we just had a very large repair done to my wife's car, which cost a significantly large amount of money. And the first thing, I'd hardly paid for it. And I got a fraud alert. Is this you? Yeah, this was, sadly, that was me. Yes. Like I said, Google is going to have dark web monitoring. Did I put that in the news this week? I don't think I did. No, because it isn't here yet. I try not to report on rumors or maybes or soon-to-bes, but in this particular case, since it's theoretically coming up, I believe, at the end of this month.
I'm on their FAQ page. I'm looking for it now. All it said is my account's not eligible yet.
Right, right.
So I'm trying to find out what it takes to be eligible.
It takes them rolling it out for free at the end of the month. I think it's the end of this month. So we'll see. You'll be able to see a dark web report if your information is on the web. Spoiler alert, it is.
Yeah.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Fred from Rochester, New York. Hi, Fred. What's up?
Oh, a bunch of things.
Well, see, I knew you'd be calling in the minute I started talking about using Linux.
Well, actually, the previous caller kind of spurred me on because we're talking about wine.
Yep.
And I've got wine on a laptop, but I don't know how to use it. I have a download of a free, now free, used to be $65 he was charging, then it just went free, a free software that is called Discriminator CNC Editor. And that runs on a Windows-based machine only. I put the wine on the laptop, and I'm trying to figure out how to load or install that software that's in my download file.
If wine is installed, all you do is double-click on it, and it says, oh, I'm running in Windows, and does.
Well, hold on.
Wine has to be installed and running first.
You may have to run a program called WineTrix, which is all one word. And it sets up all the necessary directories and does all that stuff for you. Depending on how you installed it, you may need to run WineTrix. But once you've done that, you just need to download the installer. It's probably in for your app. Now, we're not talking about wine. Wine's already installed.
Right.
And then what you do is you just go. Now, this, and I know you hate this, Fred. You're going to have to go to the command line for this. You go to the command line. You go into the downloads directory, and you type wine space and the name of the file, and that will do the installation for you. And then, again, you may need to do it with WineTrix, but generally not. And once you've done that, you should be able to just run it, just like normal.
Okay, we'll have to do a CD.
You have to do CD download or wherever you downloaded that installer.
CD backslash?
No, just CD space, for example, download.
Okay.
Capital D download, generally. And now you're in the downloads with an S. You're in the downloads directory. The installer for the Windows program you want to run is in that directory. You type wine space and the name of the installer.
Shouldn't it be sudo?
If you're not running as administrator, which you shouldn't be, you have to type sudo space wine space the installer.
I did the CD downloads, and it's now till front slash downloads.
Perfect.
$.
Perfect. Then you can type. You may not need to say sudo.
I do it just out of habit.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Doesn't hurt.
So once you do that installation, so you do sudo wine and the name of the installer, and it should install the program for you. It'll run the whole installer, and you install it, and from then on, it will be in your menu of files.
Okay.
And you should be able to just pick it out of the menu, double-click on it, or single-click on it, whichever you do for your system, and it will run.
Okay.
Magic.
You give me a lot of instructions.
I've posted a link to WineTrix. That has instructions on there as well.
WineTrix was a setup tab on the GUI for Wine.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, install that, and I did that.
Good.
But now I'm going to have to try to get that, copy that file name. It's a MSI file extension.
Right. So what you should be able to do on any directory, if it is a program like Wine, if you say Wine space You start to type the file name and hit tab. As soon as you have enough unique letters, enough letters to make it a unique name, it'll say, oh, you mean this one, and fill it in for you.
Okay. Let me definitely try that. And I probably should let other callers.
And backing up a bit, Wine is a program for Linux that lets you run Windows apps without actually having Windows.
Right.
Which is convenient for those Windows apps that don't have a Unix, you know, variant.
Right.
Yeah, that's this one does not, and I have a CNC file is a text file with a different file exchange, or it can be with no file extension, or it can be a NC file extension, all of the above.
Right.
And you know that runs commands on a CNC machine.
Right.
And to be able to edit that and look at it in a graphical way, the discriminator product has an output that shows you the toolpath.
Nice.
Of every tool. So you can look at all of that. You can look at, so if you made a mistake somewhere and it would show a line going off in the wild blue yonder, you go, oh shit, I made a mistake. So,
right.
So yeah, that's why I want to do it on the laptop, because that's only got Linux. But I'm still trying to figure out how to do that. So I've got some work to do, and I may have to call you back.
Not a problem. That's what we're here for.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks, Fred. For those of you, by the way, who don't know what CNC is, it's a thing that controls tools. So you can write a CNC program.
It's a precision cutting machine.
Computerized numerical controls, isn't
it? Right, and it's not just for cutting machines. So, for example, if you are using 3D printing and you have an STL file for that, it's a form of CNC.
Yep.
A cousin, at least, to CNC. I should say
a form of building.
Right.
And whether you're cutting or, you know, stacking. Right.
Additive manufacturing or subtractive manufacturing.
Right. In this case, additive, if you're using...
Well, yeah, most 3D printers are additive. They add layers of plastic to build a thing. Typical, when you think a big CNC machine, you start with a block of aluminum and you cut away the bits you don't need.
Which is
subtractive manufacturing, yeah.
One thing I do want to mention, which Fred kind of reminded me, since we've got a number of folks hooked on Money Dance. Money Dance is a product that is a good replacement for Quicken. And recently, I'd say in the past month, just about a month, they have done a major update to it. So, like me, if you bought it, say, in 2022, they are asking for an upgrade of $25 to, you know, cover the cost of this new program. And, you know, with tax, it comes to up to $27. Again, that's still with all the updates that they might put out for the rest of this year. And, I mean, I've gone 2 years now, with, you know, not having to pay anything extra. You know, I bought that one-time slam of the $25 back then. And it's been 2 years, and I've gotten a number of upgrades and updates and everything else. And they just roll it out.
Yep.
And with Linux, it's just there. I didn't have to worry about it. But now they came out with a newer version. You don't have to. I mean, if it's running for you, you don't have to get the latest and greatest. But I like to keep up with it. Just
when you're talking about your money, it's probably a good idea.
Yeah.
And it's only $25.
And that is one of the... Maybe the only one of the advantages of a subscription service is you always get the latest version.
Yeah. Right.
But a lot of times the latest versions is every 4 or 5 years. And so it depends on whether they consider a bug fix a new version or not.
Well, so, they've added a number of features to it and all that other stuff. And so don't be surprised if you've got an older version and that all of a sudden, you know, you try downloading it and it's not working. Because it says, you know, it's not a registered copy. That's why. You have to go in and re-register and pay your total of $27 to get the latest and greatest program with more features. It's just not like Microsoft. You know, they wind up doing a new version of the program and really don't offer a heck of a lot for their name change of Windows 10 to Windows 11. So they rearrange stuff around there and rename stuff. It's still the same program as back as Windows 7.
They're basically rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic.
Yeah, exactly.
While it sinks?
Yeah.
Oh, did you hear the latest conspiracies that the ship that was found isn't really the Titanic? It's the sister ship, the Britannic, and the Titanic was actually taken off from military.
They had that on...
Somebody's counting the windows.
The History
on the
Channel.
Rack, and it's the wrong number of windows for the Titanic.
And where's the Titanic?
It was taken away for government military experiments.
Oh, look, it's a big boat. Let's experiment on it.
Yeah. Well, they also they also brought up part of the metal.
Yeah.
That was, you know, where the hull and that, you know, got. And they did metallurgy on it. And it turns out a number of the bolts in this one area where the ship actually got creased, normally they were supposed to use a specific type of metal to create these bolts. Well, to save money, outsourced it back. Even back then,
contractors never shortchange the contract, do they?
And they wound up doing a mixture, so these weren't as strong of rivets because there were literally thousands of rivets in the hull, you know, to keep its strength. But because they were of the substandard material,
it was the Olympic that sank, not the Titanic. That's the conspiracy.
Yeah. And they wound up getting
the guy wrote a book in 98 saying so.
Look, I saw the movie. It was the Titanic.
Yes.
Well, right, the other bad thing in the design, you know, they had those compartments.
Yeah.
The compartments didn't go all the way up to the, you know, the level that they should have. They were just like overflows that it just filled up, overflowed to the next one.
It was not a well-built.
No, it was poor design.
Yeah. The iceberg cut like five compartments. If it had only done four, it would have been fine.
Right. Yeah,
but that fifth compartment was too much.
Yeah, because it got to the engine room, and literally, you know, causing an explosion there.
Yeah.
Right. So
That was a good documentary, I believe it was a documentary.
It's going to make James Cameron really angry.
Bob Ballard found the stupid thing.
Right.
Actually, well, now there's this conspiracy. See if it's on this page. Bob Ballard, this conspiracy is he was so from Woodhull Institute, well known oceanographer. You know, he's the modern day Jacques Cousteau. He was hired by the Navy to find a super secret submarine, and they found it early. And so he started digging around, and oh, hey, there's the Titanic.
I like that idea.
Yeah.
The story they tell, of course, is that they found the debris field and followed it to the wreck. But, yeah.
Because it broke, what people don't realize is it broke in part.
But we saw that in the movie, yeah. The two parts drifted far away.
Apart because the other part, the back part didn't really go under. It was the front part that went down first. And the other part still drifted, what was another mile or so, I think it was.
Yeah, maybe more. I don't remember. Yeah. It's pretty fascinating stuff.
But it was interesting. You know, I mean, learn something new, you know, and more as they study it.
So this is a pre-internet conspiracy theory.
Wow. There's a pre-internet?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, that's back when you had to post your conspiracy theories on the bulletin board at the town
hall. Go to meetings. You went to the meetings, son. Yeah. Puppy. You went to the meetings,
yep.
And you brought your own tinfoil hat.
Most of the folks out there don't scratch their head. What the heck are they talking about? I thought this was a computer show.
I just read a short story on a skate pod where the guy saved the day because he shoved tinfoil all around the library in between every book and everywhere. And the housekeeper kept complaining about all the kitchen foil that was disappearing that she needed to use in the kitchen.
Right.
That's why you're not shifted in an alternate dimension. It's just tinfoil everywhere.
All right, we're going to take a quick break while we renew our tinfoil hats. But we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, and some days it runs longer than others. Soundbites. Give us a call and save us from ourselves. 585-966-JAZZ, 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Gary from Irondequoit, New York on the line. What's up, Gary?
Well, first thing I want to tell you, your picture is frozen. And I can't see any movement from you, so it has to be recalibrated, I believe. Second thing is, I just converted an old system from 8.1 to Windows 10. Took me 5 hours to convert it.
Ooh, oh, yeah. Ooh, pain.
Yeah.
It was painful.
Yeah, I had a friend of mine text me. Unfortunately, I wasn't on. Messaged me on Facebook. I wasn't on. And she said, she gave me a screenshot. She said, my thing has been frozen. My computer's been frozen for 3 hours here. And it was an update screen. And about 2 hours after that, she texted me back, said, never mind. Okay.
She didn't see that press okay to continue at the bottom?
There's no press okay to continue. It's upgrading and don't touch the screen.
Don't touch the screen. Oh, it's painful. But I just became a new member, and I'm thankful for what you guys do every day.
Thank you so much, Gary. Thank you.
But you know what would have been more fun for you, Gary?
Yeah.
If you had put Linux on it, it would have saved you about 4.5 hours.
I know, but it's not mine. I did it for a friend.
Yeah. You'd be doing them a favor also.
Friends don't let friends upgrade to Windows 10.
No, not off a Windows 8 machine. You really hate him that much?
No, he's very, let's put it this way. During the Stone Age for computing.
Yeah. That's okay. Yeah, some folks are set in their ways, and that's okay.
Yeah, that's a shame. So many people think they can't learn anything new.
Right.
Well, I can't get a new computer. It'll have a different system on it. Or I can't change systems because I only know this one. I had an argument today with a lady. Her Microsoft Office 2011 doesn't work on today's computer.
Right.
So you got to buy a new version. Or you can switch to these free other versions. And she said, I looked at Google Docs and LibreOffice and Apple Pages on Apple devices. I said, well, no, but I'm used to Word. You can save $150 by not buying Word.
Right.
I have one other quick note. Is Windows 12 coming out this year?
Probably.
September?
We don't honestly know.
We don't know if they're going to number it 12, but there's a new Windows coming.
Right. Yeah, it'll probably be towards the fall. Winter time.
24H2.
Right.
Oh, it's in beta mode right now?
All of Windows is beta.
They're doing that. And, you know, we're still looking for the online version to show up at some point.
Windows 11 is beta.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, it's not beta. They're just letting everyone test it.
Yeah.
Don't call it beta. See, that's Google's trick. You call everything beta, and then when it crashes, you say, oh, because it's beta.
Right.
That's what Windows been doing since Windows 8.
Right.
Well, thank you very much for all your help.
Thanks, Gary, and thank you for being a member.
All right. Yeah, but if she gets mad at you, just remember, we told you to try Linux.
That's right.
All right.
Yep.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
So one of the problems Microsoft has had is that every other version of Windows has had problems.
Issues,
yeah. So everyone loves 7. 8 was horrible. 8.1 fixed a lot of the problems, but it was too late because everyone thought 8 was horrible. They skipped 9, went to 10. 10 was okay. Now they're on 11. They've been pretty good with 11 because it's really just 10.
It's just 10 with the new
name. Yeah, so we don't know if they're going to call it 12 or they'll just keep going. So right now, you know, the current version is 24H1 for 2024 first half. So they're working on it. 24H2 has been sent to the preview channel. So if you're a Microsoft insider, you can get to the preview channel and get beta software to play with.
And what more can it do? I mean, you know, you're...
Copilot and Recall, those are the two big new features.
That they can, within a year, drop because nobody likes them.
Yep.
Right.
I mean, it's like so many other things. They bring out stuff and, oh, this is going to be this and that, and it doesn't take it off. And okay, we're abandoning that. Name, you know, all the products that Microsoft has brought out and turned around and then abandoned.
Yeah.
And it's like, wait a minute, I was using that. Too bad.
Yeah. So there's a famous Steve Jobs quote about he doesn't do focus groups because he said, people don't know what they want until I tell them. Which is kind of true. Nobody knew they wanted a portable music player with 1,000 songs in their pocket until the iPod came out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other ones, we had the portable disc band, but you can only fit like 10 songs on a CD. So remember the olden days when you had the 10 CD changer in the trunk of your car and hope you don't hit a bump? Actually, before that, you ever seen some of the cars from the 50s that had a record player in the glove box?
Yes, I have.
A literal record player in the glove box. Yep. And then suddenly you have all these things in your pocket, and that's great. We didn't know we needed that. And now we can't live without a phone in our pocket. It was such a shock when Apple discontinued the iPod, because it was such a iconically Apple product, but it pretty much been replaced by the iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone uses the iPhone now, and they don't need a separate music player. In fact, that was his whole big spiel when Jobs announced the iPhone. It's a music player. It's a communication device. It's an internet appliance.
Well, like we've said in the past few years, I mean, it used to be you'd come on and always have a new product that Mac was going to bring out, roll out, you know, as far as the newest feature of a big box computer. Same with the PC side. You know, there was always the next chip that was going to roll out and improve and make your life that much better, and you couldn't live without it, and it's going to be a bigger and better box. That's been gone for a few years now, and like I've said before, you go into most retail stores, what do you see? Laptops, tablets, and phones.
Right.
The big boxes have disappeared, folks. You want a big box. I don't even care if it's a pizza box computer. You have to go online and have it ordered.
And partly that's because the chips, laptop chips, were typically underpowered. Because they produced
cell runs. They were mostly cell runs.
And they produced too much heat in that tiny laptop case. You in the older desktops, you open the desktop and there's, you know, a dozen fans in it keeping it cool. So we used to joke in the computer sales field that we could sell a big desktop and a big monitor and a laptop. So because people wanted a portable, but you get back home and you have your powerful desktop and a big monitor. Now, laptops are just as powerful, sometimes more so than the desktops, and they plug into big monitors.
Well,
so you don't need those big towers. And one of the big points of the big towers is you could put 10 hard drives in it. No one ever did.
Yeah, well, the laptop, I mean, my Raspberry Pis.
Yeah.
I can sit there and with my Raspberry Pi 4 or 5, you know, I haven't gotten a 5 yet, but a 4... I mean, I'm running it as I've got three different servers.
Yep. Somebody's making a Raspberry Pi with a Mac emulator on it, so you can stick it into a classic Mac shell, and have it light up the screen and be a Mac.
I need that.
But it's got an Ethernet port on it, and it's got a USB port on it, so you can connect to something about it. I've got two computers in the shop now, 30-year-old models that they want the data off of it onto something new because it's their life's work. Well, maybe don't wait 30 years.
Yeah, maybe.
And so we're having trouble finding 30-year-old software so we're looking for 20-year-old software that we can convert the 30-year-old software, so then the 20-year-old software can convert it to today's software.
Right. Is it word processing?
No. It's music software.
Oh, no, you're screwed.
So I need a copy of Encore from maybe 2005.
Yeah, you're pretty well done.
Yeah. So the publisher of Encore, it's gone through several publishers. It was a huge notation program back in the day. The original author got the rights back, and his website says, I'm working on a new version. It's coming in fall of 23.
Nice.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
This goes along. I was talking to somebody this week about Abbey Word.
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't updated since, I think, 2021. So it's 3 years old, hasn't changed in the least.
And people look at that as being bad.
The fact is, it does everything it wants to do, and nothing it doesn't.
And it hasn't needed it to be updated.
And it doesn't need to be updated. Yeah. Abbey Word is a free word processing program, and it really does word processing. It does tables and styles and headers and footers and grammar checking and spell checking and all of that. But now it's done. It doesn't need to add artificial intelligence, and it doesn't need to cook your lunch while you're typing.
And that's the buzzword on the new every new OS. So Microsoft has Copilot. Apple has their AI, Apple Intelligence, in the next system. So that's the biggest thing. So Apple's last big operating system, Sonoma, the current version, the number one new feature was stunning new screensavers.
Yes. Yeah.
And they're pretty cool, but really?
Well, yes, you're not seen as cool and now and innovative in the new hotness if you don't have a new hotness to put out.
Yeah.
And
to make somebody buy something new.
What they're saying is we don't really have a perfect operating system.
We don't know what to add to it because we've got everything in it.
Right. Exactly. What they should say is, you know what? Like Abbey Word said, you know what? We're done. It does everything I want it to do. It does nothing I don't want it to do. It does what it does perfectly, and that's all I want it to do. Take it or leave it. I don't care. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is James from Rochester, New York. What's up, James?
Hello, Nick and everybody. Last week I called my telephone. The screen was cracked, and it turned out to be the digitizer, and it was a Samsung phone. To make a long story short, I ordered the part from Amazon, well, the screen or digitizer, whatever they call that. That was $21. I took it to that mall place, and they installed it for $40, and the phone is, like, brand new again.
Excellent.
Nice.
Good for you.
Good for you. Well done.
Yeah, also, I think I told you last time that my friend had changed everything over to Chinese on my phone, and Steve posted the link, and I was able to fix that. He came over a couple days later anyway, and it got it back to all English. But thank you for both of those recommendations. You helped a lot.
Should have changed his phone to German or something.
Yeah. Our pleasure, James. Thank you very much.
That screen, it fixed it, the digitizer.
Good. Excellent.
Thank you.
And so there's this huge right-to-repair movement going where people want the right to repair their own stuff. Well, sure, if you know how.
Right.
And
it's not for the faint of heart.
Right. And so the funny thing is Apple and John Deere have been the two most anti-right to repair. They're poor farmers whose tractors are stuck because the computer's broken.
Right.
And part of the issue is trade secrets. We don't want to publish technical manuals and sell parts to anybody because, trade secrets. But we have seen so many computers come into our shop that somebody tried to fix that didn't know their way around inside a computer and just started ripping wires out. Didn't know you have to flip the little lever to unlock the connector. When Apple used to do end-user repairs, they included explicit manuals on how to do it, and people just ignored them. Right. So we were kind of glad Apple stopped doing end-user repairs. But now they've sort of, I guess bowed to pressure is right, because now they have their personal repair program. So if you want, you can rent the tools from Apple and buy parts from Apple to repair your own phones. And every year they add more capability. And independent repair shops can become authorized to sell Apple stuff. Becoming an Apple authorized service provider is a lot of hoops to jump through.
Big deal.
Yeah. So the independent
repair program
is easier, but you don't have to go through as much Apple training as I do.
The problem is when you do it yourself or when an unauthorized person does it, If they screw it up, they end up bringing it to you folks, and they're mad at you.
Yeah.
Because somehow it's your problem.
And now it's going to cost more than it would have if you brought it to us originally.
Right.
Because the part's broken. So it's one of the sort of the hidden open secrets in the repair field is if you can send the old part back, the replacement part is cheaper.
Right.
It's like you buy a car battery. They have a core charge. You give them your old battery back, they knock off a price of the new battery.
Right.
But that assumes that the old one you're sending back isn't physically damaged in some way.
So right. If you pried it off with a screwdriver, the likelihood is you can't send it back.
Yeah.
And you also ruined the motherboard.
Yeah.
And people that do this for a living have done it 100 times. We were just talking to Tyler. What do you say? He did 16 phones this week?
Wow.
And so he does it so often, he's got it down to, you know, he can replace a screen in like 20 minutes. The really annoying thing is that running the tests after the fact to make sure it's working take longer than physically replacing the screen. Cleaning all of the waterproofing seal off of the phone before you put the new screen on takes longer than replacing the screen.
I can remember a client that I had, and he had a brand new Dell. Literally just a month old. Got a virus. Wanted to bring it in. I says, okay, bring it in. We'll clean it off for you. And we didn't hear from him a couple days. He goes, well, I'm having trouble getting these wires and that off. He says, I'll let you know. Day later, he brings it in. We turn it around to the back side. And this is back when you used to have serial ports.
This was a tower.
No, it was a desktop unit.
And the thumb knobs you tightened your connectors down with?
And, you know, he had connectors for the serial port. Well, he couldn't get that to pull out, so he took a pair of channel locks.
Pulled harder.
Pulled the whole serial port off the motherboard.
Excellent.
Instead of loosening those two screws either side.
Yeah.
And he goes, well, you're going to be able to fix that, right? I go, nope. You destroyed the board. Well, you told me to unhook it and bring it in. That thing was stuck. I go,
no, it wasn't stuck.
He brought in the cable.
Usually the screws come out of the motherboard before it tightens on.
The thing of it is he brought the cord along, and we slowly loosened the two thumb screws, pulled it out. I says, you ripped this thing totally out. It's garbage now. And he tried to blame it on us. I go,
it's
no.
Your fault.
If you're lucky, it's only
fault.
That one serial port that broke, but you can't be sure.
Karens aren't new.
Yeah.
Karens are not new.
I'm sorry to anyone actually named Karen.
Yes.
How'd they pick that name, you know?
Well, I think the first original person was Karen.
One of my waitresses one time was a girl named, I'll say Alaska so it doesn't set off anything. And I said, man, you must really hate the device. She says, no, I love it. She says, I recently got one, and now every time my mother comes over to yell at me, it answers.
Yep.
And really makes her angry.
Cool. Oh, that's great.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to read this quick news item. In March, speaking of old software, Microsoft started testing an update to the 41-year-old notebook app that added spell checking and autocorrect to the app's limited but slowly growing set of capabilities. The update that adds these features to Notepad is now rolling out to all Windows 11 users via the Microsoft Store. And just like every other spell checker on the planet, it underlines misspelled words in red. And you can click on it to get a drop-down list of words.
Welcome to the 21st century.
It probably was one of the first note-taking programs.
Yeah, but it was just a note-taking program.
Yeah.
It was not designed to be a word processor. They had WordPad for that, and then they got rid of WordPad, and now they're putting those features into Notepad. And the reason they got rid of WordPad is because WordPad does everything you need, and you don't need Microsoft Word. And WordPad was free, and Microsoft Word cost $250.
That's what
and
I say. They get doesn't they want bring you using stuff the free out, thing. They bring stuff in, and then they get rid of it.
Right. Either feature can, of course, be disabled, within the settings, and the spell checker can be switched on or off for different types of files. So you might want it for text files, but not for .md or .lic files or whatever that is. So you may not be seeing these new features yet because Microsoft is rolling them out gradually. Notepad has received several updates over the course of the Windows 11 era, starting with dark mode support, other theme options, eventually the tabbed interface, and the ability to reopen automatically a file that was launched when relaunching the app. And those are major updates for Notepad, which for years received dang near no updates at all. The Notepad improvements come as Microsoft prepares to stop shipping WordPad with Windows 11. WordPad was previously Windows pre-installed basic word processor, but it has seen few, if any, significant updates since Windows 7. For those of you who don't want WordPad, try Abbey Word. Or you look at the new, more capable Notepad. There's an online free-to-use version of Word. There's other online programs. There's free alternatives like LibreOffice. Believe me, you don't need to run 99% of people don't need to run Office. And back to the phones. Our next caller is Fred. Fred from Rochester, New York. What's up, Fred?
Hey, I'm back again.
You're back.
I tried to run that file in the command line, and it said no such command. I ran the ls, and it lists all my files that are in that downloads folder, and the scrim one is in there. It's a .msi extension, but it does
If you type wine all by itself and hit enter, what happens?
In the main on the root directory or in the downloads?
In any directory.
Let's see, what do I got?
Does Wine have the Microsoft installer as part of it already? Because he's not an .exe file.
A bunch of stuff. Usage, Wine, program, arguments, Wine help, Wine version.
Well, then it should work. You should be able to type Wine space and the name, and you're saying it says no such command. It sounds
wine
like
space.
You...
Okay, maybe I don't have the right... let's see here, paste.
Yeah, it sounds like you don't have the right...
I'm betting that, because it said Wine could not load the kernel 32 DLL status C0000135.
Okay, did you actually run WineTrix?
Yes, I did.
And did it give you an error?
No, I did that in the GUI. Where did you go? So I ran WineTrix from the GUI from the GUI, and it says, go back to it again. It's under setup, and it's no longer there because I ran it. So it was under setup. And now it says create a fake drive.
So you have to create a virtual C drive.
Right, you have to create a drive to run stuff on.
Okay. So I missed a step.
Yeah.
All right, we're less than 2 minutes in closing, so I'll give that a try and might have to call you back next week.
I hope you do not have to, but we're happy to listen to talk to you when you do.
I'll have another donation.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Fred.
There is a commercial program called Crossover that is Wine with all packaged installers and help behind it.
Right.
I'll post a link
to
that.
But it costs money.
But it costs money, yeah.
Right. All right. That music tells us we are done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. Great questions this week. I want to thank Dave Enright and Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. I want to thank each and every one of you who has become a member of this station. As Fred reminded me at the end, it is you people who keep us on the air, and we are so very grateful. So we're done for the week, but we will be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show on the known universe right here on the truly great and grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just 166 hours. Be good to one another, will you?